Welcome to the Umpiring Fast Pitch Softball Podcast. I'm David.
And I'm Pete. And today we're going to talk about myths in softball. The kind of thing that if you've been umpiring for any amount of time, you'll hear parents and sometimes coaches yell from the sidelines or argue and make a point that they think that these things are rules. And it just turns out that ain't the case.
It just ain't so. And one of my favorites, you can keep saying it, coach, that doesn't make it any more true.
And so the fun part here is we're going to talk about them, and we're not just going to say that they're wrong. We're going to try to address the rule in the way that covers what the correct explanation should be. Sometimes it's a terminology change. Sometimes it is just a straight out inaccuracy.
Right. Yeah. And so a couple of times here, we may pause and look something up. We did a little bit of prep before we started the recording, but we want to be able to provide some real data to you, and if it's important, you know, you can write it down on a little card that you keep in your lineup card holder or whatever. But we're going to try to give you some good rule references. Some of them are impossible to reference because they're just not rules.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so first one, hands are part of the bat.
Yeah, so this one, especially in USA softball, I actually screenshotted the rule and then wrote it down so that I could remember, and I referred to it all the time. It is a rule, and it's true in NFHS and USA, probably others. Hands are not part of the bat, as David likes to say. When's the last time you went to Dick's Sporting Goods to, you know, buy a new DeMarini, and it came with a pair of hands on it?
Yeah, so definitely not a part of the bat. You can see these rules. 8.1.2c is the
NFHS
rule. Yep. So, and it says very, very clearly that the hands are not part of the bat. So if the ball strikes any part of the person, including the hands, the ball is immediately dead. Now, that doesn't mean it can't be a dead ball strike. That doesn't mean, you know, they automatically get first base. That doesn't, you know, none of that stuff. But the hands are definitely not part of the bat. If the ball hits their hands, it is hit the person and it is a dead ball.
Yeah. And so reading that here, it says a pitched ball not entirely within the batter's box, not swung at nor called a strike, touches any part of the batter's person or clothing. It does not matter if the ball strikes the ground before hitting the fielder. The batter's hands are not to be considered part of the bat. If no attempt is made to avoid being hit, the batter will not be awarded first base unless it's ball four. So,
and that actually, that rule right there, Pete, has another of the myths that
right
we
there.
Had. No hit by a pitch if the ball bounces first. You know, you hear a parent yell, oh, but it bounced first. It hit the ground first.
Right? Yep. So what?
Yeah.
The goal is it's still a pitched ball.
That's right.
So
she could still hit it.
Yeah. If it's available to hit you.
Yep. For sure. So that's two right out of the gate.
Booyah.
The next one, it's going to be hard to find a rule reference on this one, but can't bunt with two strikes.
Yeah. So that one is just, it may not be smart to bunt with two strikes, depending on your strategy and the skill of the person at the plate. Because, of course, what is a rule is if you are to bunt the ball foul and it would be strike three, that foul ball would amount in strike three situation. Normally, you can foul the ball off all day. But
if you're swinging.
Yeah, if you're swinging. But a bunted foul on a third strike,
on two strikes,
know, after yeah, two strikes, yeah, would become strike three and you're out.
Yep, but she sure can.
She sure is welcome to try.
Yep. So anybody that says you can't bunt with two strikes, I challenge you to please find the rule reference and show it to me in between the next half inning. Go get the rule because it's not one. And I'm teasing about that, by the way. don't challenge parents or coaches to go find stuff in the rule book. Now, the next one's a fun one to talk about. Tie goes to the runner.
Yeah, so this one, I've seen this become a topic of discussion several times on some of the groups and forums that we belong to. People get angry about this. They say that this is a myth. You know, tie doesn't go to the runner. Sometimes we like to argue and say there is no such thing as a tie. You know, at a quantum level, the likelihood that there has ever been a tie is probably next to none. You know,
what does quantum level mean, Pete?
We're talking about atoms and, you know, subatomic level. And we're talking about things that it just the level beyond our visible spectrum and metaphysically and whatever, like whatever level we're talking here beyond that, you know, we're talking about atoms or we're talking about their soul or their spirit, whatever level you want to take this to, that doesn't matter. There probably was no tie, but to your naked eye, it appears like a tie. Let's say your brain has witnessed it. You saw it, you stopped, you admired it. You replayed it in your head and your brain says tie. What's the call?
Safe.
So what you just said to me Sounds like you gave a tie to the runner.
I sure did.
Why?
Because the ball did not beat the runner. The ball has to get there first.
Yes.
Not the ball has to get there. I'm sorry. Don't say not. The ball has to get there before the runner.
Right. So this is where it becomes tricky. And this is where us pulling up the exact how you get out would come in. But it does it say, because this is where the question would be, does it say the ball has to beat the runner, or does it say the runner has to beat the ball?
Because that the ball has to beat the runner for there to be an out.
Yeah, because if the runner has to beat the ball, then a tie would go to the fielder. That's right. Right? So that wording becomes, that's, so we're sitting here playing with words, we're playing with the English language here, but that is the meaning of these things, is that if the rule says the runner must beat the ball, then a tie would go to the defense and she'd be out. If the ball has to beat her, a tie means the ball didn't beat her, it arrived at the same time.
Yep.
So this is a greater than, not a greater than or equal to situation.
That's right. Yeah, exactly that. Greater than or equal to says the tie would be either or.
Yeah.
Right? If they got there at the same time, then the runner would be out. It doesn't say that. It says the ball must beat the runner. And so if the ball does not beat the runner, and the runner does not beat the ball because they both happened at the same time, who gets it? The runner. So ties do go to the runner. And I would say that maybe people who struggle to say that's not a rule, that's a true statement, but the effect of the rules makes it a true statement.
And so in a wise umpire situation, you're not going to say that. If a person comes out and argues with you and says, it was a tie, just say you called her out. Okay. And so he comes out and says it's a tie and he wants it to be tie versus runner or whatever. And you don't want to use those words back to him. You want to say, the ball beat the runner, or the ball did not beat the runner. Use the language of the book.
Yeah.
So whether or not logically we're playing with the English language and we're dissecting this and we're saying it means this, always use the book language whenever possible, whenever you have the recall or the mental capacity have memorized it and be able to spit it back out in the heat of battle.
Yeah.
You know.
And the coach gets their warning for questioning a judgment call. So
there you go.
So you know. So no, it was a tie. She should be out. Or it was a tie, she should be safe. It's like, no, I judged, in my judgment, the ball beat the runner, so she is out. Or in my judgment, the ball did not beat the runner, so she is safe. Not, it was a tie, so she's safe. Cool. So it's 8.2, Article 2. After hitting a fair ball, the batter runner is legally put out prior to reaching first base. The batter is out.
Yeah, so what it's saying is the out must be occurred prior to her. So again, we're saying before.
That's right.
So that's our justification there.
That's right. So 8.2.2.
Yep. All right. Here's another fun one. On a home run, there are a lot of people who believe you cannot touch the runner until she touches home plate. I can tell you as an umpire, I've seen this in travel. I've seen this in school ball, in middle school. I've seen it in high school where someone will hit a home run and the girls will be excitedly waiting for her at the plate. And then as she gets close, someone will be like, don't touch her. Wait, come back there. Wait, don't touch her.
Yep.
And then after she touches on plate, they, yay, and they pat her on the head and whatever and tell her she's great.
Yep.
A lot of people think that if you touch the runner, it's like give her a high five, or slap her on the back or something, you have just put her in jeopardy and she's out.
Right.
And that is not the case.
That's just not true. So there is a rule about people touching base runners, coaches touching base runners that would make them out, but mm-hmm. it is to aid that base runner.
Or other runners. And, if there's a girl, runners, and someone goes behind her, let's say you got a slow runner and a girl behind her catches up to her and starts shoving her like a locomotive or something, like, can't do that.
Yep, can't do that. So, and so I guess maybe that's just a misapplication, I guess, for, mm-hmm. by the parents or coaches that believe that you really can't touch her for that. But she's already hit the home run. And so what comes to mind, too, is several years ago, remember the girl who hit a home run and I don't know what happened. Like she popped her knee out of place or she tore her ACL or something. Yeah. And then the opposing team picked her up mm-hmm. and carried her from base to base so she could touch the bases and score the home run. It couldn't be her own team. It had to be the opposing team to do that.
And there's two things here. One, so the rule, and it talks about rule 3.5.4. A coach shall not physically assist a runner during playing action. The penalty is the runner's out and the ball is in play. So that's the justification. But we looked this up before. If a runner were to hit a home run, round first base, and roll her ankle and be unable to continue, you can substitute for her.
That's right.
You don't need to do the heroics of the team showing good sportsmanship and playing it good for YouTube. You can sub her out in the middle of that situation.
Somebody in to run for.
Yeah. Someone else can complete those running duties. Yeah. And I feel like that you could even get a situation where if you're out of subs, someone else can still even complete that.
For an injury, I believe.
Yeah, for an injury. Because I think we looked this up and there was one of the mods on the group was having that discussion, and I remember I dug it up and pulled it out, and she was right. I didn't think it was right. So I was like, I'm going to prove her wrong, and I'm going to show her what's up. She thinks she knows. She's a rules interpreter mutt. But it turns out rules interpreters often, not infallible, but they do happen to know the rules, and she was correct about that.
And then especially if you're going to post it out on social media, you know, you should probably look it up.
Yeah.
So yeah, you don't have to do that. Now, I will say and encourage any players and any coaches who are listening to this podcast to please, please, please stay in foul territory, stay in dead ball territory. It would be very helpful to your umpire if you would stay on the first base side, foul territory. Like go, if you're in the third base dugout, go around the plate and get on the other side of the plate and let her touch home plate before you start celebrating with her and whatnot. I would just highly encourage you to do that.
Mm-hmm.
Not even actually from an umpire's perspective, from a coach's perspective. There is one very, very important thing that must happen. That runner and all preceding runners must touch home plate. You have to touch home plate. Make sure she gets her job done before you go celebrating.
Right.
And then I'm reminded of, you know, one of our former players who hit a walk-off and didn't go down and get to first base, you know, because everybody came running out onto the field, tackled her, you know, because she did such a great job of hitting this walk-off, and they threw her out at first.
Yeah.
For the third out, and no run scored. And so it's like, come on, guys. Do your job first, celebrate second.
Yeah.
You know,
we talked about this. There was a former episode where we talked about what would happen if this happened and the player did not touch the plate, and then all the fun assumptions of, well, she passed the base, we assume she touched the base, and then it opens up for an appeal, and then what if she does this and does that? So we had a fun discussion about that, and we'll leave that to people to examine our archives. But
I don't remember if I say the details about the preceding runner never made it to the plate.
Yeah.
So she didn't even pass the plate. She peeled off and got in line to go, you know.
Yeah, yeah, that was that one.
The girl. Yeah.
Yeah, so technically she would have passed the runner.
Right.
And then so it's like, what constituted? Yeah, we had that discussion about what constituted passing the plate. And like, it was a lot of stuff.
Yeah, it's a mess.
Yeah, so don't do it. So what he's saying is make this as clear cut as you can. However, it is not illegal to high five the girl as she comes down the line.
That is a fact. All right, here's a fun one. You have to slide.
Yeah, so there's a lot of times people think you're coming into the plate. So we're specifically here talking about plays at the plate, whether or not the player has to slide, and that is not a rule. So this is not one where we can quote a rule that says you don't have to slide, because that is not in there, that at least not that we found. But there are duties that you have on a play at the plate like that. So you cannot have malicious, you cannot initiate malicious contact. So what you can't do is run down the line and crash into the catcher. So I don't want to say drop your shoulder, do this, because then now we're saying, well, she didn't drop her shoulder. I'm not saying that. Malicious contact, it's like the Supreme Court defined pornography. You know when you see it. Like, it needs to be, you look at it and you say, okay, that was malicious. It wasn't accidentally, not just because she bumped her. The catcher's standing almost on the plate. The girl's trying to touch the plate and they bump shoulders on the way by. Not malicious contact. It's contact. That's okay. Likely, you know, again, what did you see? But what about this? What do we got here, David?
So
you have a rule and a case play for us.
Yeah, we have rule reference. 8.6.14 is the actual rule. And so the rule says, I have the case book open in front of me. I'm sorry. So let me get to the rule here real quick. 8.6, article 14 says the runner remains on the runner's feet and maliciously crashes into a defensive player. Malicious contact supersedes obstruction, by the way. But so this is I'm certain that this is the rule that parents and coaches are saying, hey, she has to slide. The runner remains on the runner's feet and maliciously crashes into a defensive player. So if she remains on her feet and doesn't maliciously crash into a defensive player, she did not slide, and therefore there is no infraction. So the infraction becomes available for use in malicious contact.
And let me blow your mind. Uh-oh. She could slide and still maliciously contact.
She sure can.
Because if you go in, you go in, spikes high, and your aim seems to be to cut her leg or her arm or something with the way you're sliding, or you kick in a way as you're going down or whatever, you could be maliciously sliding.
You can absolutely be maliciously sliding. And I'm grinning like a Cheshire cat because I just had a memory flood in. Our summer team was playing in a tournament at Berliner. My daughter was pitching and we were on defense, and there was going to be a double play, and the offensive team slid into our shortstop, kicked her in the knee, you know, deliberately, like you just said, you know.
She did it deliberately.
Cleats, yep. Cleats high. My daughter saw it, and we actually ended up, you know, getting out of the inning right then and there. And as Casey was coming into the dugout, she said, "What was that girl's number?" And I'm like, "You don't need to know." She said, "Oh, yes, I do." So you can only imagine. I won't call her out, but you probably can imagine what my pitching daughter decided she wanted to do.
She wanted to make sure she didn't get on base again, so she couldn't cause problems.
No, I'm pretty sure she was putting. I'm pretty sure she was putting her on base.
I was trying to help.
Yeah, if I'm not mistaken, I'm pretty sure she was putting her on base. All right, so there are some case plays with that, but it's the case plays are really more about scoring the runs and whether malicious contact caused or superseded obstruction and things like that. So since we're talking about rule myths, you don't have to slide. You just cannot maliciously contact. That's kind of the bottom line.
Mm-hmm.
What's the next one, Pete?
Yeah, so the next one is a batted ball that hits home plate is foul. There are some people who think that we used to have this all the time, even just playing ball in the street and stuff. People think if you hit the ball and it chops and it hits home plate first, or it hits home plate and does whatever. Maybe it even, there's even a case play. It talks about if the ball lands directly on home plate, that is a foul ball. And that is not true because, like all bases on the field, every base is in fair territory. Therefore, if it is on the base, it is in fair territory. Ipso facto, A equals B, B equals C.
That's
therefore,
right.
A equals C.
And I would even say, what color is home plate?
It's white.
What color is the fair foul line?
White.
Are fair foul lines in fair territory or foul territory?
The line themselves are in fair territory. They are fair. They're fair.
They're fair.
Yeah.
Because they're white. They're fair. Everything's fair. Everything white is fair. The pitcher's plate is in fair territory. First, second, third base and the plate are in fair territory. Safety bag. Is it white?
No, it is not white.
Why?
Because it's not in fair territory.
Because it's not in fair territory. Yeah.
And reasons for this. The important thing here too is if you think about where the lines go, if you watch someone line the field, the way that they line the field is they stick a stake behind home plate at the tip of the plate.
That's right.
And then they go up that slanted edge right down the line past where first base would be. And so the line is literally drawn. It does not extend there because, you know, they don't start drawing it until the batter's box corner there. But if you were to extend it, logically draw it with your foot, it goes back and it includes the entire plate starting at the tip.
That's
so
right.
You could see it on the field. You can watch it be drawn. It's in fair. I don't know how this got in. They think it's not fair. It's like one of those things. Like if you play tennis, it just randomly some kids at a community court, some people think maybe if the ball hits the net, you know, that's because it's unfair. I'm playing so deep because we're hitting the ball back and forth and you hit this one and it hit the net and just barely dribbled over. That's not fair. Volleyball. That's not hit the net. That's not a rule.
Right.
You know, it doesn't matter. Yeah, it stinks. It stinks for you that the ball got hit and it didn't roll true, quote unquote, because it bounced off the plate and not the dirt. So it got extra bouncy or not bouncy enough, but that's not a rule. It's fair territory. It's the definition of fair territory. It's the definition of the field. Do you want to see what we're talking about? Go into section like one of the rule book where the field is designed and it shows you what is fair territory and what is not.
And please tell me that you don't have to do that. Because, you know, it's fair. That's all there is to it.
Yeah.
So while we're talking about fair and foul, another myth is that the ball is fair if a player is in fair territory when it's touched, even if the ball is over foul territory.
Yeah, so there's some weird rule. What's funny is this is actually the opposite of football. If you'll see sometimes smart players, and when you kick off the ball in football, if the kickoff goes out of bounds, that's a penalty and the ball comes way out to like the 35 or something. And so what a smart player will do if the ball comes to rest close to the sidelines, the kick returner will go stand in foul territory or in out of bounds territory, lay down with his feet out of bounds and touch it with his hands. And that ball is now considered out of bounds, because the player is out of bounds when he touched it. So other sports have rules that kind of go this way. However, that is not the way this goes. So if we look at the definition of a foul ball, which is in rule 224, I believe. Yeah. Which is section 24, foul ball, foul tip. A foul ball is a batted ball that settles or is touched on or over foul territory between home and first base or between home and third base. While on or over foul territory, touches the person of an umpire, a player, or any object foreign to the natural ground. So this all, every, we read all these, there are several, it goes through G, bullet points. Every one of them is the ball's relationship to that line that we just described for the last piece.
Right.
It has nothing to do with the players. It's where was the ball when it was touched? Not where was the player when the ball was touched. Where was the ball when it was touched? If you imagine someone reaches out and gloves it, immediately snapshot in your mind, draw a stake to the ground. Where on the ground does it land? Is it to the outside of the white lines or the inside?
Yep. We actually had, again, summer ball, and it was our 18-plus season. So after the girls came back from their freshman year in college, and we were actually playing a college team that had gotten together, you know, themselves, and were playing in this tournament. And one of their third base person who plays for a college, I won't call her out, but her third base person said, "No way that was foul. I was standing clearly in fair territory when I caught it, or when I touched it, when it hit my glove." And she was standing in fair territory, but she had reached clear across her body and tipped it, you know, and so she wanted the fair ball because they thought they got an out.
Yeah.
And it's like, no, the umpire's yelling foul ball. And she's arguing that it was not. I was standing in fair territory. And I'm like, yeah, that's not the rule. And she's like, yes, it is. I'm a college player. And I'm like, no, it's not. And I'm a coach. I don't know what to... We're saying irrelevant things to each other.
Exactly.
Except for that's a foul ball. Because if the ball is foul. Also, this goes back to fly ball calling responsibilities for an umpire. Where if a fly ball is close to the fair foul line, your first signal is to indicate where the ball was when it was first touched. Was it first touched over fair territory or was it first touched over foul territory? Because if it was first touched over foul territory and then dropped, that's a foul ball.
Yeah, dead ball, nobody's advancing.
That's
right. But if it was touched over fair territory and like she botched it and kicked it over to the fence,
yep,
that's a live ball, even though action happened out of play. Okay, that's right. Or not a play, out of fair foul territory.
Exactly. So, yep, balls, it's the position of the ball when it's first touched is the most important thing. So not the position of the people. All right, so the last one here is the batter has a right to the box. The box is a safe space.
Yeah, so this has come up several times. We talked about a case scenario that came up on Facebook where a player went to bunt, did not bunt, and the catcher came up throwing and just nailed the batter in the head. And the question was, did that batter interfere? And, you know, so the question, some people's justification, we decided that she did not, but for reasons of the rule, not for reasons of this. This is, again, comes down to, she did not interfere because the box is a safe space. She has a right to the entire box. She ain't got a right to the box. She has a right to her what? Position in the box. She sets up, she gets her position, she's there. So after she swings or doesn't swing or whatever she does, she should freeze until the ball is returned to the pitcher. Or at least the ball clears, you know, the area, whatever she's going to do with it. And then she can do all the other things she's going to do. Sit there, shuffle the dirt back and forth, adjust her grip, adjust her batting gloves, get her sign, whatever. So what do we got here? We got some rules and we got some case plays.
Yeah, we do. So it's the rule is 7-4, Article 4, NFHS rule. The batter interferes with the catcher's fielding or throwing by leaning over home plate, by stepping out of the batter's box. And here's the big one. By making any movement which hinders either the action at home after the pitch reaches the catcher or the catcher's attempt to play on a runner.
Yeah, so that's why I said don't move, because it says make a movement which can hinder. If you stand perfectly still, you are not making a movement, and therefore you're not in violation of this rule.
That's right. But if you move and she's trying to throw that girl out, she's trying to backpick the girl at third, or she's trying to get the girl stealing from second to third, and you move and interfere, You're guilty.
Yeah, and this is a judgment. The judgment is, the umpire is judging that it hindered, but you are giving him that out there to say, if you take your pitch and then the same thing you always do, you take your front leg and you step back, for instance, maybe 1 foot out of the box or to the very edge of the box, so you're now kind of belly button to the coach so you can look at them. It doesn't matter. It's the same thing. It's what I do. It's my natural move. It does not matter. Yeah. Your movement hindered the ability to make a play.
Yeah, this is a coaching failure.
Right.
When we see this problem, this is a coaching failure. When you've got, and you can see as a plate umpire, you'll see girls that have been well coached. You know, if there's a runner at second or a runner at third and that catcher makes any kind of move, and they just kind of like, sometimes you'll see them even like bring their elbows
yeah,
in.
They'll get real like, small as they can.
In front of them and they'll get small, but they're not moving, right? They're just, I'm not moving, man. So you can't, you know, can't get me. There's also a penalty here, though, that where in times, sometimes you do have to move out of the box.
And again, because, arguing against it being a safe space.
That's right. Yeah, exactly. By failing to make a responsible effort to vacate a congested area where there is a throw to home and there's time for the batter to move away. So this is a judgment call, though. I mean, it's like, you got to get out of the way. And if you have the time to yell at the batter to get out of the way, and these younger girls, right, the little ones, you know, like, move batter, look out, batter, you know, they're coming. Look out, you're going to get, you're going to get trucked. You know, when they're smaller, if you had that time, she had time. But so anyway, that's the rule. There are some case plays in here, but it's really crystal clear on the rule. You can't make a movement which hinders the action at home plate or hinders a throw on a runner. You can't move. And so therefore, it's not a safe space. And that myth is busted.
Busted. Yeah. So you feel free to stand still. You have a right to your position in the box. But that doesn't just mean your feet. Again, if you sat there and like twisted your upper body back and forth, you know, creating a distraction and a hindrance in some way, your shoulders are now going in and out of the throwing lane, whatever it is, that's, you're out.
Yeah.
Like, you know, so it's literally.
Even sometimes, so there is a case play that talks about your momentum. And so if you were swinging at an outside pitch and you missed, and then your momentum carried you across the plate, and the catcher tried to throw the girl out, stealing second from first, and you're in the way. That's interference. So you should have stayed in balance.
Right.
You know, you can't.
It's tough.
You can't do it.
Yeah. Sometimes.
And by the way, if it was strike three, the girl at third is out because she's closest, because now we have interference by a retired runner or by a retired player, not runner. Right.
Yeah.
So if it was strike three and you interfered, you're not, the girl at second is out. She goes back to first, but the girl at third is out. So
it's tough. Sometimes you can do your best and you can still lose.
That's right. Yeah, absolutely. I mean, it's like getting doubled off on a line drive, right? You were stealing, and you know, the batter messed up and hit a line drive to the pitcher, and she turned and tossed the ball first base. You're out. There's nothing you can do about it.
Nothing you can do.
Absolutely nothing. So anyway, I think that's what we have for myths. If you have some that you want to share with us and have us talk about, hit us up on Facebook or go to the website, and or you can send us an email, right, Pete? What's the email address?
It's podcast@umpiringfastpitchsoftball.com.
Awesome. Thanks for listening.
Yep. Till next time.